Hi, everyone. My name is Deesha Patel, and I work for the Health Literacy and Learning Program at Northwestern University. I'll be presenting my analysis on the associations between health literacy, English proficiency, and medication belief. I have no relationships to disclose, and I would just first like to acknowledge some of the many people who have helped make this analysis happen and worked on study conception and design up to data collection. So one out of every three U.S. parents have limited health literacy. That's a pretty high number. So how is health literacy defined? We've already seen this definition twice before my presentation, but it is the degree to which individuals have the capacity to obtain, process, and understand basic health information and services needed to make appropriate health decisions. This means that one in three U.S. parents lack the skills to make safe, informed decisions when administering medication to their children. One in 10 U.S. adults have limited English proficiency. This is simply defined as the ability to communicate in English. This is a primary barrier to accessing health information and services, and many of the methods currently used to combat health literacy are the same as those used to communicate to patients with limited English proficiency. For example, using native language, easy to understand wording when delivering information to patients. One in three U.S. parents hold skeptical beliefs about prescription medications' harm or overuse. And among adults, these beliefs are associated with poor adherence to disease management regimens. We don't know much about how beliefs about medications are associated with health literacy and English proficiency, especially among parents of young children, and how parents' beliefs impact behaviors and child health outcomes. Therefore, the objective of my analysis was to examine the associations between health literacy, English proficiency, and medication beliefs among parents of young children. We used a sample of 681 English and Spanish-speaking parents who were at least 18 years of age and presenting a child up to 8 years old for a well child care at one of two pediatric clinics in California and New York. The sample came from the SAFE-RX study, which is a series of experiments aimed at identifying best practices for pediatric liquid medication dosing. Our outcome measures were two subscales from the Beliefs About Medications questionnaire. Parents were presented with four statements from each subscale, which were scored on a 5-point Likert scale for strong disagreement to strong agreement. The raw sum total was then scored for each subscale, which ranged from 4 to 20. The first subscale pertained to beliefs about medication overuse, and here are the statements that went into it. For example, doctors use too many medicines. The second subscale captured information about parents' beliefs about medication harm, and for example, one of the statements is most medicines are addictive. Our first predictor was health literacy, as measured by the newest vital sign. This measure was categorized as likely limited, possibly limited, and adequate health literacy. Our second predictor was English proficiency, simply measured by the standard question, how well do you speak English? If a parent responded very well, they were considered proficient. Otherwise, they were considered to have limited English proficiency. So as you can see here, the parents in our sample on average were aged 30 years. Most of them were mothers and of Hispanic origin and born outside of the U.S. And a little over a third had less than high school education. Over 40% had likely limited health literacy, and as you can see, it jumps up to almost 80% when you add in possibly limited health literacy. And two-thirds of these parents had limited English proficiency as well. On average, parents had slightly stronger skeptical beliefs about medication overuse than about medication harm. First, we'll look at beliefs about medication overuse. Here are results based on linear regression analysis. The adjusted models included both health literacy and English proficiency. As you can see, although both of the predictors were significantly associated with beliefs about medication overuse, this relationship only remained for English proficiency after adjustment. Now we'll look at beliefs about medication harm. Here you can see that both predictors are significantly associated with beliefs beliefs about medication harm, even after adjustment. So what can we conclude about these findings? First off, limited parent health literacy is independently associated with stronger beliefs about medication harm. Secondly, limited parent English proficiency is associated with stronger beliefs about medication overuse and medication harm. And third, health literacy is more strongly associated with English proficiency than English proficiency is with beliefs about medication harm. So there are some limitations to these findings. First off, the results are based off of cross-sectional data. Therefore, we were unable to assess the impact of beliefs on actual medication use, for example, how beliefs impact medication dosing accuracy. Secondly, our findings are limited in their generalizability. We recruited parents at an urban clinic, well, two urban clinics, and parents from rural populations might have varying distributions of medication beliefs and other factors such as health literacy, English proficiency. And also, the sample consisted mostly of Hispanics. It'd be helpful to look at a more racially and ethnically diverse population in order to tease out some of the cultural differences impacting medication beliefs. Third, we were using basically questions that got to beliefs about medications in general, and beliefs can differ depending on the type of medication, its frequency and length of use, and various other factors. There's actually another beliefs about medication questionnaire that focuses on specific medications, and it consists of two different subscales. The first assesses beliefs about the necessity of taking a specific medication, and the second captures concerns about medication based on beliefs about the danger of dependence and long-term toxicity and disruptive effects of the medication. We weren't able to look at that because we were basing this just off of a series of experiments that were aimed at hypothetical dosing trials. So that will hopefully be a next step. So this analysis has led to some very interesting questions for further research. First, how do parent medication beliefs influence parent behaviors, including child medication dosing? Secondly, how can we identify parents at risk of having impeding medication beliefs? There's clearly some interplay between health literacy, English proficiency, and medication beliefs, but the next step is to take this information into the clinic. Currently, there are no recommended clinical practices for health literacy screenings, and a good start would be for physicians to have more conversations with parents in order to understand the obstacles to proper medication use, which parents simply lack a good understanding of medication use and safety, and which of them also hold strong negative beliefs about medications, and how do those both impact medication use. Third, can interventions that target medication beliefs help address literacy-related health disparities? Do medication beliefs impact behaviors apart from health literacy and English proficiency? Or are these factors so interrelated that we can achieve the same results by focusing on just one piece of the puzzle? Can simply looking at health literacy-focused methods, such as patient counseling and talk-back teaching methods, improve medication use as well as reshape medication beliefs? There's a challenge on the time burden on physicians. We need to fully understand why certain beliefs are held and then be able to come up with a time-efficient, targeted intervention strategy. But as of right now, at least we were able to see that the same associations that have been seen in adult populations are being seen among parents of young children, and it would be nice to move that forward and be able to see how that truly does affect medication use, or if parents are actually, regardless of their health literacy or English proficiency or their beliefs, their dosing of child medications and child medication safety knowledge is still going to be stronger than it would be for their own medication use. So that'd be a great future step as well. Clearly, there's a lot more to learn, but thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dina. Okay, are there any questions specifically for Adisha? Yes, Christina.
Hi, I was wondering about if the clinics you recruited participants from had any non-English resources for those patients.
So we didn't really, we asked questions regarding how well they process information in different languages, but we didn't actually provide any resources or anything like that. Is that kind of what you're...
Did you know if they were available at the clinic, like maybe outside of your spectrum?
So they did. There was a high proportion of Spanish-speaking patients that typically come in, so they do have resources in both English and Spanish available. Yes?
I would wonder, when working with the culture you work with in another culture, if holistic medicine would have an impact or was a question related to them giving the medicine to the doctor.
We really just talked about medications in general. So I think that would, and that's basically what I was talking about with the beliefs about medication questionnaire, how there are two other subscales that really get to more specific questions about, you know, different medications and other things that we weren't able to capture from this. But that will be a next step when we move into an efficacy trial. So.
Okay, we can, thank you very much. We can open up questions for the entire panel. And we have a question here. Sure, please stand.
Hi, thank you guys for speaking today. I'm actually working on a policy in the state of Michigan with regard to health literacy, but I'm focused on healthcare providers, so the doctors, the nurses, etc. I know you guys were more focused on the end user, but do you, based on your individual research, do you have any ideals or opinions on how the healthcare providers can be better with the individual end users who help build up literacy?
Well, there's the Ask Me 3 campaign that focuses on the provider. Where you ask, where the client goes in and there's three basic questions to ask their provider. And that is one of those big campaigns that focus on health literacy called Ask Me 3. And so if the client doesn't ask, then the provider can ask those three questions, would you like to know more information? But I think you should investigate the Ask Me 3 campaign.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have another question.
I think all the questions were fantastic. Thank you so much. I have one about middle childhood, your research. Where were the children recruited from? I'm just wondering just a little bit of the demographics and the socioeconomic status of the parents. A lot of times the parent is probably educated, and those children will likely have access to more information. So just a little bit about that.
Sure. This is a good community in the Mid-Atlantic.
If you want to come over here.
I'll just try to talk. But the Pacific community in the Mid-Atlantic region was interesting in the sense that the school itself was pretty racially diverse. It was almost 30-30-30 white, black, and Hispanic. However, the specific sample that I had was recruited from a before and after care program, which as you can imagine, since parents have to pay additional fees to enroll their students in the before and after care program. Plus, usually when students are enrolled in before and after care, it's because the parents are working up until a certain time of day, which tells you a little bit about the demographics of those children compared to those of the actual school, the entire community. I didn't actually collect socioeconomic information from these specific children, but even just comparing the racial diversity, 70% of the children in my study were white as opposed to the 30-30-30 breakdown in the actual school. The other thing is, and some of my committee members noted this as well, that it seemed like some of the responses, even if they have inaccurate, so to say, descriptions of health, they seem to be sort of like quite sophisticated responses in certain instances. One explanation of that could be because of the specific demographic of those specific children, but it also very much just could be with that developmental period. They're acting as sort of filters of the information that they're getting around them. Sometimes they may not know exactly what it means, but they've heard these words and they're able to say them now. Even if they're not able to pronounce them correctly in some time, but they'll still use them in conversation. Does that sort of again, this is just one dissertation project in one school with 29 children. We'd be really interested to see in different geographical settings, different demographics, what that will look like.
Thank you.
I have a question, sort of going along this line, the line of many of the measurements used really focus on the individual and at the individual level, and certainly in the last presentation we saw it was very diverse cultural makeup of the sample. In Dr. James's presentation, using new technologies and how health information is accessed and communicated. So do you feel currently measures reflect this social, cultural variation in health information access, obtaining, processing, and evaluating health literacy?
Huh?
So do you feel like current...
Can you use plain language? What is the question?
The question is, are current measures appropriately capturing more interactive elements of health literacy? Interactive meaning not just at the individual.
I don't know. I can only speak to the instrument that I use, that it's a valid instrument, and that with this population that we did the internal consistency with that. So I can't speak to population measures because that's not the focus of my research. I can only speak to what I'm, what I'm doing. I can't speculate beyond the individual level.
That's a great question, and I would say that as per my knowledge, there may be not. I know that there are researchers who are trying to develop measures of health literacy that focus on the clinician level or the health practitioner level as opposed to just the individual. At least researchers are starting to recognize the importance of that, and that health literacy cannot just be seen as like an individual's health literacy is their health literacy, and that is the point that I made at the end of the presentation. And sometimes it's due to limited time and resources, or just due to feasibility, and because of the validated instruments that are available, we tend to focus on the individual. But I do know, if some of you are familiar with the work of Luna Reddit at Harvard, mm-hmm. I think that's a concept that, at least from what I have read about her work, that she's really trying to push forward, that we really need to see it as this package, and we can't just see health literacy as an individual health literacy. So I think that's a very important point, and hopefully very soon we will see more measures or techniques that get at the whole picture rather than just the individual.
I think that if you look at Healthy People 2020 and what they're talking about with regards to health literacy, it is at the individual level, because the individuals in terms of using and accessing, and frankly a lot of information don't have to be given from the provider. The provider should not be the end-all and be-all of health information, especially for those of us who are health educators. And when you talk about patient empowerment or empowering communities, I think especially with disadvantaged communities, it's the empowerment of the individual, empowerment of communities to take back some of that information. And so even with the Ask Me 3, it's being proactive. If your physician does not bring it up, then there's something that you need to be doing. With health literacy also, it's about advocacy for those who have limited health literacy, having a patient advocate who can help them get that information and use that information. So as far as I'm concerned, we have not even done that much to move the individuals forward in terms of even improving health literacy. We just document that they have or they don't have it. We don't do research to say what can we do to even have them improve their health literacy. So at this point, I'm really not concerned about the provider level. We have not even moved the research forward to increasing the client, consumer, or the patient's health literacy.
We have time for one more question in the back. Did you have your hand up?
When you're talking about populations and groups, I teach in nursing school, and we go to the
young classes. They seem to be a really cool way to reach people in groups. And I've done it with international college students and in South Africa, and then culturally diverse, like Asian groups. So we reach a large number about how to talk to a doctor and stuff like that, because they just go in 15 minutes, they're out, you know, and there's no communication. So that's where I see reaching someone.
Okay, last question. Okay, well, thank you, and let's thank our panel one more time.